When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome back to Rick Shields Golf Show Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Rick Shields. I'm here with co-host Guy. This is episode 119, and you've guessed it. It's a Friday special.
It's 120.
It's 120. And it's a Friday special.
That's the thing. Again, we said it last week. We'll say it again. You don't know what you're going to get with us now. Sometimes it's a Tuesday, then we throw in a Friday. You've got to be on your toes.
It's unpredictable. Today, we've got a guest on who we've already recorded the podcast. We're doing this intro after. We had on the podcast Martin Borgmeyer. Now, if you don't know the name yet, you soon will know the name.
Yes.
Because he is one of the longest drivers of the golf ball on the entire planet.
It literally goes Kyle Berkshire, or Berkshire, how you pronounce it, Guy Charnock, Martin Borgmeyer. So that's how good he is.
He's top three.
He is literally top three.
So Martin flew over from Germany. So at the start of this video, we've just literally picked him up from the podcast. We just picked him up from the airport.
Yes.
And then we just go into loads of detail about how far he hits it, why he got into long drive, the sport of long drive itself.
Yes.
Because it's something I'd never realised before. But it's intense.
Well, I think that's why this is such a good podcast, because obviously, firstly, he can talk. He's a very charismatic guy. He's German, but his English is absolutely incredible. Phenomenal. We went out for lunch with him after the airport, before we then came and did this. And you're chatting to him, and it's just like everything you say, he knows all the kind of lingo. You forget he's German. And then he did a voice note to somebody, didn't he? I was like, oh yeah, you're German. You're speaking in German. I was like, that's mad. You can speak German.
He speaks better English than we do sometimes.
Does. And yeah, he said his story, the whole world of long drive is something that I think a lot of golfers kind of know roughly it exists. But to hear actually the stories about how, you know, people make a living from it, how they want to improve, how the actual tour as such could improve, it's very interesting, very insightful.
So you might be getting ready for this podcast thing. I don't really care too much about long drive. I honestly think the insight that Martin gives us might just give you that kind of encouragement to maybe watch the next tournament or watch what's coming up next or the World Championship towards the end of the year, because it is fascinating. And also what Martin does as well towards the end of the podcast, he gives you some top tips about how you, watching and listening, can hit the golf ball 12 yards further.
Well, this guy knows his onions, and so much so, and he'll say this a lot more in depth in the podcast, he's big mates with Bryson, like genuinely very good friends with Bryson DeChambeau, who Bryson reached out to him to get some tips on hitting the ball further, and we all know that's worked for Bryson. So yeah, this guy knows his stuff.
If it works for Bryson, it can work for you. So sit back, relax, enjoy this fantastic Friday special episode with one of the longest drivers in the world, Martin Borgmeyer.
Yes, it's a good one.
And just like that, we're back. We've been to the airport, we've been to the driving range, and now we're here with Martin. You know what I want to start off with? Explain to the listeners and viewers your like maximum numbers you've ever got on driver distances.
Oh, wow.
Give the audience what they want nice and early.
Well, that's because that's so relative, right? It depends so much on the day and all of that. But right, I know you want to talk records.
You're chatting to someone in an elevator, and someone's literally said to you, oh, you're a long driver. How far do you hit it? What's your stock answer?
I know. My stock answer is my longest one was 439. Oh. Actually, on a sim, it was 475 or something. But if I crank up like the sea level to 10,000 feet, I can hit it like 700 yards.
Yeah.
That's how relative it is. And then I tell them, like, it's about the speed, actually. Because that's comparable wherever you go. That's always the same. And the fastest one I've ever hit was 231.9. That's been a world record for a long, long time. And right now, I'm on the hunt. So I'm hunt to break it.
To get that into perspective, 231.9 miles per hour of ball speed when hitting driver.
Yeah.
That's incredible. To give the listeners a little bit of a baseline, I kind of pretty much max out at maybe 162. Sometimes I'll get near to 165, but my average is about 160. So you're 70 miles per hour faster ball speed.
Actually, on quad the other day, I've seen you at like low 160s, right, with range balls?
Yeah.
Is that about right? I mean, to put that in perspective, on a quad, I can do that in club speed. I don't mean to brag, but I feel like I am a little bit, maybe.
So in today's podcast, you know what I really want to get into and really get involved in? Obviously, a little bit about you, because I feel like you're very much at the start of your kind of long drive journey. Obviously, you've been there, done that so far in the last few years. But you know what? I also want to give the listeners, and I want a bit of an insight. What does the long drive world actually look like? Like, I feel like it's such still a mystery. Like, certain things, like how many events, where is it played around the world? You've got the world championship, you've got the, is there a European championship? Like, all these things I actually don't know the answer to. So I don't know how you can simplify that, but what is the ultimate award for someone like you, a long drive? Let's start there first.
That's very simple. That's a world championship.
So the world championship, that's once a year. Okay, and where does that normally get played?
So the last two have been in Mesquite, Nevada.
Okay.
So that's the famous place with a mountain in the back, perfect grid. That's, well, our fairway, right?
So explain, how wide is a grid?
That's between, let's say, 35 and 60. Mesquite is 60 yards wide.
So there's no, it's not a set mark. It's not a default yardage. It can vary venue to venue.
It's like par in golf.
Okay.
Some are like 70, 73. Well, it depends a little bit, but we have our like parameters.
So let's say it's 60 yards. Okay. Yeah. Mesquite each year, last 2 years. And how do you get into that? Like, what's the, how do you step up on that grid to even contend to be a world champion?
So one thing, anyone that starts their long drive journey figures very, very soon, yes, speed is amazing, but it's actually about dealing with conditions. Because just like out on a golf course, you're facing different winds. So that's the most important bit. Weather depends on the sea level a lot, but wind obviously being the biggest factor. And you have to be good enough, versatile enough to deal with a headwind, with a tailwind, with a wind off the left, wind off the right, and all of that to be, well, able to win a world championship, because that one is played over 4 days. And being fast and good on one day is one thing, but if the wind switches on the next day, well, good luck.
And is it all knockout?
Kind of is. So what we do is, so the idea of long drive is, everybody, we only compare numbers that are hit at the same time, because you cannot compare a distance that's being hit 2 minutes later,
because
the wind could have switched, right? So we play with four guys at the tee box at the same time. Everybody's playing a different color ball.
Yeah.
And they're being measured live at the grid, in the grid. So there's guys out there in the grid actually radioing back the numbers.
So you're competing. If you're one of those four, you're competing against those three other guys at that time.
Yeah. And we play in groups of 16 guys. So, and we're shuffled around. So everybody's facing everyone at some point of time, and we're switching tee boxes as well, so color of balls, and then those distances are being compared with four guys at the tee box at the same time. The longest one of that set is getting 200 points, the second one 100, 50, and 25.
So it's more like a league table.
True. And when you don't hit it in the grid, you get 0 points.
And how many shots do you get in that particular?
Six.
You get six shots. And What's a reasonable percentage of shots that go in the grid?
Some are like at 1 out of 6. Others are like 6 out of 6. It depends.
So it can vary
so much. So for me, last year I was 2.5. I want to make it 3.5 this year. So let's see. That's pretty much when I'm over 50%. That's really good.
So that means you get more consistent shots in the grid.
Yeah. So also you have more chances for better bounces. The more you hit in the grid, it's not only about where the ball lands, it's about how it bounces. And well, maybe sometimes there's a bit of a gust, right, you want to use. So the more you put in, the better chance you have.
That's fascinating already. I feel like I'm already learning lots. So you're getting that league table, and then does it filter down to knockout?
So half of that group of 16 is advancing. The other half is being eliminated. And we start at like 128 players or so.
Oh, so it's a lot.
Oh, yeah. And then down to the final eight.
Right.
Do the same thing again at the round of 16. And then when it's down to eight, we separate those in two groups of four. Do the same thing again, cut in half, then four, and then it's the final with only two.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. What's been your highest place finish so far in the world?
Last year it was top three. So top four, actually coming tied third. Well, wasn't happy with that, obviously, right? I want to win it every single time I go there. But I was just happy, to be honest with you. It's been such a long break with COVID. I couldn't compete for 2 years.
Of course.
So that ball that I mentioned in the beginning, the 231.9, was on March, I believe, 19th in 2020. So I was ready.
Yeah, yeah.
I was ready, but I couldn't show anyone.
So you have to obviously peak your performance to get ready for that.
Absolutely. And that's something I need to figure out myself because I observe certain things that happen to my speed over time, but I'm experimenting with like different taper periods. That means like how many days do I take off before an event to be the fastest? Then most of the events, like the one in like 10 days, it's only 1 day. So you hit in the morning to qualify, kind of the same system that I mentioned. And then in the afternoon, it's like the top 16 and we go down to the winner because these events are not as big. It's not 128 players or what, it's
of
like
course.
32. So that's a 1 day event. That's an easy one. You taper, you do your recovery and you're good to go. But over 4 days, prime that because you got to hit every single day.
Yes.
How do you practice for that? You don't have any time off.
How much do you win if you win Worlds?
125, I believe it was last year. No, that's wrong. No, that's wrong. It was 50 last year, but it's supposed to be 125 this year.
$125,000.
Yes.
And then what does second place get?
I would guess 50.
Okay.
I haven't looked at the table, to be honest with you, because I don't mind. I don't do this for the money. It's amazing that there's eventually some money in there, but I don't go out there to win money. I go out there to win that belt. I want that belt.
Just speaking then about obviously why you do it, I feel like we've jumped in really hot
in terms of
all these questions bombarded. But like, I think what's mad for me is that like obviously everyone listening to this podcast plays golf to some degree.
Yeah,
a lot of people will be aware there is this kind of sport of long drive, but it really is a niche sport within the sport. And kind of one of the things I was kind of wondering really, and I think you've told us briefly, but it'd be good to kind of tell us in more depth, obviously on the podcast, is how, I'm taking it you were a golfer, how do you kind of branch off from kind of authentic golf into this kind of world of long drive? And how big actually is it? I feel like it's bigger now with this kind of presence online with social media, but is it still super niche?
It definitely is, but there's some things that are definitely transferable to golf. And that's why so many players actually approach me and all the other guys as well, because they see what kind of speeds we put up and they're asking themselves, what of this can we use for golf or what's super contradictory? And well, over time, by working with so many guys, we kind of have a better idea of what makes sense for golf and what does not. And then in terms of eyeballs, in the meanwhile, I mean, with Bryson DeChambeau competing last year, obviously a lot of people were interested in how he would do, and then they saw long drive and they got hooked, and now I hope this year is going to be one of the rocket years for long drive, definitely, not only in terms of eyeballs but also in terms of people coming out and try to compete and see how they do, because you don't know how good you are until you try.
So let's rewind. You're right, we did jump in a bit hot there. Let's rewind that. So you would have played golf growing up, right?
Yeah.
So what did you get your handicap to?
Well,
and do you still have handicap?
I believe so. I've never checked it. I mean, for a long time, as soon as you make money by doing something with a golf club, I feel like you turn pro.
Yeah.
I guess they changed that rule last year or so, but well, I don't really care because I don't play any tournaments. So
what did you turn pro? What did you, when you last playing golf properly, what was your handicap?
At the age of 14, it was 3.
That's last time you played golf properly?
That was 16 years ago.
Honestly, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
And do you even, if someone says to you, oh, I recognize you, you're that golfer, that's probably not really true to what you are.
Yeah, well, I'm the sprinter. I'm not the marathon runner or like the decathlon athlete or whatever. Right? I'm like the drag racer.
Do you ever still play golf?
Not really. So, I mean, it's a huge part of my practice. So I hit a lot of iron shots as well to go through my routine, go through the motions and all that. It's the basis. It's the fundamentals, obviously. Without that, you can't do long drive. But around a golf, well, maybe 2 a year.
My God. And what do you reckon you'd shoot if you just went out and played tomorrow?
It depends so much on the course, on the PGA Tour course. I hope I would break 90 on my course out there. It's like mid-70s.
Because there's, whenever long drive gets spoke about, certainly online, it's like, well, why doesn't he be a tour pro? Or it's because he can't putt. Mm-hmm. Like, is there any actual truth in any of those statements?
So my putting has always been pretty good. So I was around 30, maybe sometimes under 30 putts around, also as a junior. Also, my short game is quite sharp around the greens. But the issue that, well, came about by hitting it so fast and long, it's actually anything between 60 and 150 yards is really tough when you don't practice it.
Yeah.
Because I can hit my 58-degree 150 yards if I want to. Doesn't make sense on course, but because it spins like hell and, well, you can't control it. But now hit it 72 or 98 or 114.
You struggle to hit those yardages.
I mean, it's guesswork because I never do it. I never practice it. It doesn't make sense for my job. Yeah.
You know what's mad though? I've seen you hit balls twice now in the flesh. When we went down to London and then today when we went to Manchester, hand on heart, and I don't know if you agree with this, I don't know many people I've come so close to who hits it as good as you do.
In terms of actual strike
just
as well.
And sound and flight. Like, there's not many golfers I've been present with who hit it as good as you do.
Oh, stop it, Rick. I feel like I only had a good day.
it's 100%. You were hitting that one iron that you were absolutely flushing. But, you know, people understand that to catch a one iron, which you don't even see anymore, well, it has to be hit with speed at the center. And the speed you're generating, and obviously centers a strike, it was just pure.
It just, like say, if anybody at that driving range, if we would have said, watch this guy hit a one iron, what does he play off and what does he shoot? Yeah. What do you reckon the response would be?
Well, they suppose he's a tour pro, he doesn't have a handicap.
They think you're a tour pro.
Yeah, so, I mean, when I look at driving ranges at tour events, like European Tour events or PGA Tour events, it's so boring. It's, well, they, the actual, or what's actually impressive about what they do is that it's so boring. That they do it over and over again, the same shot, same distance, same shot shape.
Shots on their 100 yards.
And the thing is, when I step up and hit a golf ball, people are impressed because they've never seen it before. Because whenever you, let's say you make a long putt, everybody has, anyone out there has made a long putt at some point in their golfing career, right? That's where you make the money eventually as a tour pro, but everybody has done that. And no one has ever, not a lot of people in this world have, hit a one iron, right? So that's probably the difference why it's so impressive, because they cannot do it. You can hit the same shot as like Tommy Fleetwood. Like you just
that's
do
true.
It. You just,
that is true.
You just do it less, less often.
Yeah, those 6-inch putts. I'm just like Tommy. I'm literally exactly the same. So you're 14 when you kind of playing off 3 handicap. Did you even know at that age you could hit it a long way?
Mm-mm. I had no idea. Absolutely not. And people ask me all the time, like, hey, what was your speed back in the days? I have no idea. There was no launch monitors. So I don't know. And also, I never went out and there was no lasers either. So it was guesswork how far my ball went. I obviously hit it longer than most of my peers, but no idea.
You're a pretty tall man. How tall are you?
6'4", that's 194.
When you were kind of 14, 15, were you really tall then as well?
Yeah, pretty much. Then I started smoking.
Okay.
So then kind of stopped.
Is that right?
Yeah. As I had a really rough time there when I was like 16, 17, stopped playing golf, my first motorcycle, all the cool stuff, right? First girlfriend, all that. Started smoking and then didn't do it for a long time, but I did it. And that kind of
got out your system.
Changed things. Yeah.
So you said there you almost like quit golf.
Yeah, completely. I didn't touch a club for... The truth is probably 6 years. I always claim 8 years, but it's been 6.
And then
maybe once a year. Yeah, girlfriend started my, that dream of becoming a pro golfer was gone.
So that, like most kids at 14, 15, we all think we're going to be best golfers in the world. That ship had sailed.
Yeah.
And then you went off the rails.
And what do your parents tell you? they'll do something like an ordinary job. Go get an ordinary job. Go do your studies or whatever, right? Then I did a bachelor's degree. That's what we call it dual studies back in Germany. So you're actually working for a company and at the same time they fund your studies.
Oh, yeah.
So, well, that's what I did. Like an
apprenticeship over here.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's an apprenticeship, but also you get a bachelor's degree. Nice. Right? So it's both at the same time. Did that. And then the same thing on the job. I did a master's degree in business psychology. And then all of a sudden when I started actual work, I worked in IT project sales. So I was selling IT projects, like large projects, like millions of euros. And did pretty well, I would guess. And my clients and colleagues play golf. Mm. And all of a sudden, I had to go back to the golf course and find my golf clubs in the basement, right? And then I had my clubs were way too short and stuff. That was the clubs back from the days and like when I was like 14 years old. And I mean, I started playing golf again, and obviously I hit it longer than these guys. Sure,
straight
I mean,
away.
They were like 60. They hit it like 160, whatever, 170 yards when they caught it. So yes, yeah, sure, I hit it further. So, but I had no idea that it's that much of a difference, because in the meanwhile I started playing basketball when I was like 18 or so, and because I did not play basketball back in the days, so I was lacking a bit of fundamentals, so no technique and stuff. I had my two moves in the paint and that's about it, kind of, and in like the third quarter my opponents figured, so I had to do something about it and get stronger. So I went to the gym, gained a lot of vertical jump and all of that to actually make up for that. And that mixture, I feel like, of the technique of the old days and that new strength was like
the vertical jumping is good golf move, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So you did a lot of that to really train your basketball skills.
Actually, yes.
And you were getting bigger and stronger. Like, were you a big, obviously you're tall, but were you, did you have a physique when you were younger? Were you
No. I was kind of more like the lean, tall guy. Kind of. I mean, the frame is fairly okay, but as I said, I started smoking. I didn't go to the gym. That was a couple of years later.
So you're into basketball. You were trying to do things to enhance your basketball skill. You were getting a job in IT, wearing a suit.
Oh, every day. Suit and tie every day. I have like, I have like 12 suits or so still in my closet. Yeah.
So then you were playing golf with these older clients of yours, hitting the ball a long way. Realizing that it's quite a long way, but then what was next? What was like the, was there a next kind of stage of this development?
Yeah. So that's actually so funny, because I was someone from my golf team, because these guys realized like, oh, he's fairly okay. So I played a bit of golf with him, and they got me on the team like immediately, because it was not a very good team. It was like whatever, lowest league team. They wanted to have me on the team, and they figured like, oh, this guy's actually hitting it a long way. So they signed me up for the German long drive championships in Cologne. Yeah, in 2017. So, and I went there and I had to figure out what long drive actually is.
Did you want to do it?
Yeah, I wanted to do it then, but I was not, I didn't have the motivation to like sign up myself or whatever, right? It was like, well, cool, but
you'll give it a
whatever. I just won the long drive of like the last cup we've played here at this, at this course. So that's pretty good enough, right, for me. But they signed me up, and then I was like, okay, I got to get this. I actually got to do well at this one. And I read a little bit of info about long drive and what you actually use and what kind of clubs they have and all of that.
Oh,
and
God.
And then I got a 48-inch club off eBay to prep for that event.
No way. Right?
Yeah, yeah, just to hit a couple shots with it and have like proper equipment.
And that's the legal limit as well in long drive, 48-inch. Yeah,
still is, yep. Still is. So I got that long driver, which was a brute back in the days, with like any shaft, anything I could find for like $50 off eBay. And, well, used it, and actually used it on course as well, because I liked it so much and it went so far. And actually, well, I was mishitting drivers anyway, so that didn't make a huge difference. And actually, when I was mishitting it, most of the time it was on the parallel fairway and not in the woods, because it was longer, right? Yeah. And more off center. So went there to that event in Cologne, and the full story is actually, long story short, in the meanwhile, I founded another company, because on the side, as a side job, I wanted to do something in the golf industry. So with a friend of mine, we founded a company that was called Punchline Golf back in the days, and we had tees and divot tools and gloves and all that, all private label products made in China, because we kind of got into this, like, well, do you think kind of mindset? And we're like, hey, what are we going to do? Oh, we both have golf in common. Let's try golf. Yeah, that's where we came up with a couple of products. In the meanwhile, they're all being sold, not very profitable. So we kind of set it to on hold. But that was the actual reason, also motivation to go to that long drive event for me, because these guys
sell stuff.
Yeah, they were like, yeah, Martin, you have to go there and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, well, whatever. But then we discussed this. We're like, well, maybe it's a good opportunity for us to go there.
Taking some big teams. Yeah,
and exactly. And even if you do well, even better, right? So I got that long driver. And yeah, then went up there and I hit the longest ball of the day in Cologne. And came second because I missed the grid in the final.
Oh.
40-yard grid, and I had absolutely no experience how to handle that situation.
Oh,
right?
My God.
So how far was your longest ball that day then?
That was in meters, and I believe that was 323 into wind.
It's like 360 yards.
Yeah, 350, 60 yards, something like that. Wow. Yeah.
So at that point, then, did you think, I've got some potential? I mean, did you win some money for that?
No, I was playing as an amateur. So I couldn't win any money, but there was a bunch of pros, obviously, that didn't hit it as well. And, well, Joe Miller was actually given a clinic that day. So he had a job as an entertainer or whatever. He did an outing at that event.
Just explain to listeners, Joe Miller.
Yeah, Joe Miller is a two-time world long drive champion. So he was the number one, definitely in Europe, if not in the world at that point of time, 2010 and 2016 world long drive champion.
And in this story that you're telling now, what year is this from?
2017. So okay. he was the reigning long drive champion at that point of time. And well, because I try to... Well, at least educate myself a little bit before I went to that event, because you know, sales approach and all of that. Yeah. You got to know what you're doing at least a little bit.
Yeah, try and wing it.
Yeah, yeah, and all of that. So I knew about Joe, and that guy was there, and he was given a clinic, and I was watching him hit, and I was so impressed. I was like, oh my God, I want to be like that guy. And his backswing was like so long.
Very long.
Very long back in the days. And well, I couldn't get past parallel at that point of time, because well, I was lacking a bit of like mobility, flexibility. Maybe I just didn't get in that position. I don't know, but for some reason I didn't do it. I couldn't do it even on practice swings. And then all these guys at that event obviously approached me and were like, Martin, seriously, you beat every single one of us and you beat yourself in the final. You got to take this seriously. You can actually become something in this field. So
you've got the potential.
You got the potential. Go do it. And well, then from that point in time, and also I got Joe's number, by the way. I'm very, very proud of that. So, and I still remember I put my name, so my contact into his phone, and I saved my name under Martin Borgmeier, 136 miles an hour, because that was the fastest clubhead speed at that point in time that I ever had. 136, and I was very, very, very proud of that.
I bet.
Yeah. So, well, for long drive, now it's, well, 140 plus probably for most guys. You got to have to actually be competitive, because there's so many guys.
136 is like a sandwich for you now.
136 is, yeah, a sandwich, three wood, a sandwich, 3 wood, maybe. Yeah, but... that's how it all started. And from then on, I was scraping the internet for information. I didn't find a lot. I found a lot about like launch parameters, a little bit here and there, but nothing about long drive really. A little bit from Lee Cox and Joe Miller, but not a lot. And well, what I did then is I reached out to Lee Cox, to Joe's coach at that point of time, and still is. I was like, hey, I really want a lesson because I feel like I got the potential. Here's my numbers. And he didn't respond for a long, long, long time.
No.
Yeah, I was following up a lot of times with that email. I was like, hey, so you know, I really want to listen. And then I finally got an appointment like in, I don't know, 5 weeks of time or something, like far away. Went there from Munich by car.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So how long was that trip?
That's like by with ferry and everything, like 12, 13 hours.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So put into context, Lee Cox is an English coach who now currently coaches at the Shire. Is that where he was?
Yeah. Same place.
He was there then. So you've driven from Munich to the Shire, which is just outside London.
Yeah.
To go and get a lesson with Lee.
Yeah.
How long was the lesson?
We did 3 days.
Oh, good. I thought you were going to say like an hour then.
No. I was like, dude, I really want to do this. So let's book in for 3 days. I mean, not full 3 days, but an hour a day or two a day.
Yeah.
So 5 lessons, maybe 5 hours lessons. And that was so funny because I got there and he knew my numbers. He set up his flight scope and was like, hey, Martin, okay, Mart. He called me Mart. Hey, Mart, do you want a bottle of water? Yeah, the first thing. And I was like, as a German, I got there. I was like, is that English? I didn't
know. This is English, not learned.
I not learned. So I definitely figured how I'm lacking in understanding or having a conversation in British English. But whatever. He made me hit golf balls with his flight scope set up. And after 3 balls, he was like, hey, hit 5 balls just for me so we get some numbers and stuff. After 3, he approached me and he shook my hand and he was like, okay, so we can actually start working because you didn't lie to me.
All right, yeah. So I bet a lot of people do when they go and see him.
A lot of people. And then they sent him numbers with like, don't know, 140 club head speed. They show up there 116 and they're saying they have a bad day. So it happened a lot. So he's doing these kinds of things to kind of figure out how that lesson is supposed to be for him. And then, we started working and we worked together ever since. Even during the COVID break, I couldn't see him for like 2 years, but we spoke on the phone like on a weekly basis, sending swings back and forth. So yeah, I still trust him with everything and everything. I get a lot of different information from all different sides. Trust me. Yeah, this is going to make you better and this is going to break your record, bro, and so on and so forth. Whenever there's something I feel like this might be a thing, I always confirm with him if it's worth trying. It really grew into an interesting relationship we have.
That's crazy.
So from this point then, you said you didn't really play golf from being 14, but you kind of semi-took it back up, but then got into long drive quite quickly. Have you not really then gone back playing kind of normal golf at all? It's just been all long drive.
All my time at the driving range, everything, because at that point of time, I was still working full time.
Yeah. I was going to say, you're not quitting your job.
No, I was still working full time. So the time I had off the job
had to be just long drive.
Everything, driving range, trying to figure out how to get better. Yeah. And I still have videos from like 2017, 18, when I was hitting golf balls at the driving range at like -7 degrees, snowing, like snow all around. And I mean, nowadays I know that's the worst conditions you can have to actually create speed. But I did it because I really wanted to.
But when you were kind of going with these lessons then, but still having a full-time job, what was the kind, was it just going to become a hobby, or was there an end goal to do it professionally? Because it doesn't feel like something that is that obvious to turn professional at. So what was your real goal at that point?
At that point of time, it was only like they still had the LDT back in the days, the European, the Long Drivers European Tour. Mm. And I just wanted to try that tour and see how I would do to then do the next steps. Because in the US at that point of time, Long Drive was really growing. It was on Golf Channel. There was a lot of good guys. There was a lot of money in it. And I was like, give it a shot and then let's see. I've never ever really in life have made like goals in terms of this is the like 3-year plan and this is where you need to be. It's always like this is the direction and let's go. Because all that planning and stuff, I did so much of that already on my job. I had to do all these reports and like plans and blah, blah, blah. And all of that was actually only made up from a lot of people actually in like big companies. But I was sick and tired of doing this. So I was just, hey, this is the direction. And just do everything you can to get better and push it, and see wherever you end up. That's, the best you could do.
That's crazy. That really is. I've got 2 questions about Germany.
Okay.
First one, the Autobahn. You can go as fast as you possibly want.
Yeah.
I've been on it. It's scary.
So if you don't know this, in Germany the motorways are called Autobahns. Is that I pronounce that correctly?
Yeah, Autobahn. Yeah.
And there's no speed limit
for most of it. Yes, I don't know the percentage, but we have another sign. You don't know a traffic sign. You don't know in the UK. That's a white sign with like black stripes through it. Right. So. As soon as you see that sign, you can do whatever you want.
And what's the fastest you've ever been on the Autobahn?
Oh, wow. Me driving? Like, maybe 280 or something? Like
kilometers?
Yeah, that was not my car, but that was someone else's car.
So that's like 150 miles
miles an hour-ish. I don't know.
Have you done it, did you say?
Well, what's even scary, I went, but I was a passenger. Like you were saying to him, you got in Rick's car, you're on the wrong side.
Yeah.
So I was sat, what felt like I was in the driver's position, but as a passenger, doing like 100, not stupid speeds, but fast. But what speed do you go at? If you're just driving normally then, do people still go like crazy fast?
Yeah, so 200 is pretty much normal, I would guess, right?
Word.
So,
like
so we, I mean, what we do is we have different lanes. We have the speed lane on the very left, mm-hmm. and then the other lanes are like the slower lanes. And there's a rule in Germany. When you're not in the process of overtaking someone, you have to go right. You have to move right. So let's say the Autobahn is like there's no one in there and you're going 300. You're not supposed to do that in the left lane. You're actually supposed to move over to the right regardless how fast you are. People don't do that most of the time. But
it's similar to here. Yeah. We have the same rules.
Okay, gotcha. In the US, it's completely different.
No, very different. That's free for all.
It's chaos. Yeah. Absolute chaos. Okay, so when you respect those rules, you can actually do that in a very safe way.
God forbid, there must be some accidents though at them speeds.
Oh yeah, sure there are accidents.
And there must be worse accidents, surely, at those speeds.
I don't know the statistics, but I feel like it's not necessarily that more dangerous. So what we do is, there's still a recommended speed in Germany of 130. So whenever you're having an accident, and that's related back to because you were going too fast, you're probably facing a problem with your insurance.
I get you. Yeah. Fascinating. My second question about I've always wondered, I'm going to have to go and try it one time. My other question is, starting golf in Germany is very different to starting golf everywhere in the world, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Explain, so let's say now I'm a 12-year-old lad in Germany, okay? How do I start golf?
So in the meanwhile, it got a bit better. When I was starting at the age of 9, I was the only one doing this, actually, going to a driving range and hit golf balls. There was no other juniors at my club, maybe one or two. In the meanwhile, it's like hundreds.
So what got you into it?
But it was actually my dad who went to the driving range with a colleague of him. So he didn't play golf, but his colleague did. And I was with him that day, and I loved it. I was, as soon as the first ball was airborne, I was completely hooked.
Yeah.
I loved it. And well, then I wanted to go to the junior whatever training
at the academy,
whatever it was. Yeah, and that was on Thursdays, and on Thursdays also was basketball, because as a very young junior when I was 9, I already played basketball for a short amount of time, but I decided for golf. So then from then on, like every Thursday was my golf day. But well, that's how it's like in Germany still. I mean, there's in school, we don't teach golf. It's all your private stuff you do. It's mostly parents that decide that their kids, well, play golf or not. It's it's very, very different to other sports.
But you need a license.
Oh,
in
yeah.
Germany.
So.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oh, that's not only for juniors, but, well, everybody needs a license to actually play golf. There's no, like, public courses you can just show up and play, or a very, very, very few, so maybe, like, 2 out of 750. So you definitely need, like, a card, a license.
What the hell?
Yeah, to get that. And to get that license, you need to take X amount of lessons or do, like, courses or classes that take, like, 4 weeks to complete to actually be allowed to go out on a golf course. And the reason why they do that, or, well, how they argue that that makes sense, is that you learn how to behave on a golf course, so you're not slowing things down, know how to replace divots, and
yeah,
all that stuff.
Well, I saw Eric Anders Lang did a video over there with Scratch TV, and he actually did the test.
Yeah, yeah.
It's quite nerve-wracking, isn't it?
I think on paper, I'm totally against it, because, like, it's so such a barrier in it to get people to go and play in golf when you've got to have a license. I think some elements of it in its smallest form, I do quite like the idea of. Not so much the behaviour as such, but, like, understanding how to actually go and play.
The rules and the etiquette.
Yeah, because if you went to go and play on your own for the first time ever, you wouldn't know anything, would you?
Very rare you'd go on your own.
You wouldn't know what to do. And certainly, like, when you play with a golfer that's a newer golfer, they often don't know where to put the bag, where to put the pin when they take it out, and it's all a bit awkward. So it'd be quite good if golf clubs had some level of, like, not a license, but something like that, I think. But to actually have a genuine license just seem ridiculous.
So if I was to go over there and the Germany now picked up to a golf course and said, can I play golf? I've not got a license.
They would probably ask
you. So look at this face on Rick Shields.
Do you want to see my chip?
They would.
No, please don't.
We just got a very simple test.
That's
not
a weird. Did you see my chip? No, not at McDonald's fry.
It's a chunky chip, thank you. yeah, they'd walk out the pro shop and go, right, okay, not a problem. All you have to do is very simple. Hit the green here from 10 yards. I'm not playing golf.
I'd have more faith than say, if you said you hit this fairway from 300 yards, you're like, yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah.
They would probably ask you for your home course and your handicap, and if that sounds reasonable, then they would allow you, as long as you pay.
Do people not lie in Germany about this, though?
Well, if you don't know golf at all, you don't know what a home course is, you don't know what a handicap is, so you could probably, well, do some catch me if you can style. I want to get on this golf course and make it work, definitely. But as soon as you touch a golf club and you can't play, they would figure.
I'd love to do the test.
Go do it.
Yeah, we should do it.
There's a video.
Yeah.
We'll drive over, go on the Autobahn.
Yeah.
Fly down to Munich.
Yeah.
Fly down, like, Autobahn it. We'd be down there in like 2 hours. And then do the golf license. How long does it take? How long would it take me?
The license?
No, I just want to do the test.
The test itself. So if you can make it on a course, it takes like 10 minutes.
I'd love to do that. You
just go to some course, talk to the front desk, and there you have your answer.
I love it. I'm saying I love it. I love the idea of doing it. I'm very mixed with it. I couldn't understand it. And then I must admit, after watching that video that Eric did at Scratch TV, I kind of sat back and went, yeah, there's bits of this I kind of get.
Well, you know, it would be good then in the UK. It wouldn't happen because it would take too much time. But if when you join a golf club, you have an option that the pro could take you out and give you like a half an hour, like, yes, kind of, not even a lesson on the swing, but like
introduction.
Yeah, because there is stuff like, even sounds silly, but raking a bunker and repairing a pitch mark. We know how to do that. She played golf for years. But if you've never played golf, you might not do that correctly. But food for thought.
You were amazed today when we took you to the driving range, weren't you?
Absolutely. I mean,
that, how busy it was.
That place, it was 11 o'clock in the morning on a Friday, and it was completely packed. So we actually had to find a bay.
We lost the bay because we went.
True. Yeah,
actually two.
Yeah, so we've got a video coming out with Martin. I'm not quite sure how it's going to come together, because as soon as the guys at Trafford heard wind that we'd brought Martin down, we actually got, never happened this, I just got banned from hitting drivers at a driving range because of you.
Without hitting drivers.
Yeah, he just, the Pete Styles there just kind of looked at Martin.
His presence.
And as his eyes continued
to
go
today,
up,
mate. Slinky Dog.
Where's he from? And he said, what are you doing, lads? I'm just going to hit some drivers. Not sure if you're allowed to do that because there's stuff around us. There's roads.
That's
and
quite
stuff.
A good flex, though. Now you're not allowed to hit drive. The driving is just too long. Like for me, I probably wouldn't hit drive because it's going out to the right or left too much. But you're like hitting it that far. If you'd have hit golf balls today with a driver and hit them well, there could have been some consequences.
Yeah, some cars might have got smashed. So
or bad. I mean, I hit it right and left too. I mean, that's true. Mishits and long drive, right? So, long left and long right is also kind of dangerous on that one.
Yeah. Anyway, that should be a good video coming out. So the next question I want to dive into. So what is right now the current, because you guys, when you chat between you, it's all about ball speed, isn't it?
Right now it is, definitely. Yeah.
Even a wheelie, it's more about distance, but that comes down to the environment and everything else. So right now, you did have the world record for the fastest ball speed at 231.9. What is it now?
And Kyle broke it? Kyle broke it at Kyle Berkshire. He broke it at, I believe, 234.4.
Wow. Is that a big jump then, that 2 and a bit miles an hour? It sounds it, but is it?
It's. I am very, very confident that that record is going to go up to like 237.8 this year.
How do you determine a record? Like say if you hit one on GC Quad at your studio, how is that?
That's very debatable.
Proved.
I gotcha. I feel you. And I see a problem definitely coming up very soon. But right now what happened is, and that was kind of coincidence because when I broke the record, I went out to the US. That's such a funny story actually. Long story short is Trump shut the border because of COVID in March 2020. I was in Turkey that time because I just decided to do this full time and did my training camp actually to see some outdoor ball flights because for a long time in Munich, you cannot see a ball flight because it's too cold. You predominantly hit indoors, only indoors actually. So I went out there and saw the news and I booked a ticket to fly over to the US that day and flew the same day because I was afraid at that point in time, you didn't know what's going to happen that night. So I... In my head, the U.S. shut the borders and play their full season and everything, and they're just going to live their normal life, and I'm out here in Germany and cannot compete. That's why I flew out. And throughout that flight, a lot of things changed already. So I had, like, over the last 6 weeks, I had, like, 4 events and, like, appointments, photo shoots and all of that. Everything was canceled during that flight. But I was out there. In Charlotte, I feel like I booked the flight to Charlotte because it felt like it's the closest airport. Let's just go to the U.S. and go from there. So what I did is because I had to find a flight back and that was not very easy.
Yeah.
But I found one from Miami down then to Toronto, then to Amsterdam, then back to Munich. So I went down to Miami to the shop of Bobby Bradley. And now comes the reason why I tell you all of this. At Bobby Bradley's shop, who's one of the long drive guys, 5-star custom golf in West Palm Beach. That was the place where Kyle hit the first 230 ball ever, 230.2. That was a couple weeks before I went there. Then I hit 231.9 in that sim. Same simulator, same everything.
Wow.
Same ball, same everything the same. And now that's kind of the place, the go-to place to prove your records.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And Kyle did the same thing a couple weeks back with the good guys, hyping him up and like hitting 234. So that kind of is the place right now that defines the world records. But it's very debatable.
That's almost become the world record hub.
Kind of, yeah.
And when you say it's a world record,
yeah.
Like, do you get anything? Like, it's not a Guinness World Record,
no.
Is it?
No, it's not an official record, but... In like, in the group of long drive, it's an accepted record.
Yes, so in the world of long drive.
In the world of long drive, it's accepted that this is a true number. That there's no funky settings on it or whatnot because we figure obviously. So this is the truth that's actually happening. But it's debatable because balls have different speeds. Like the top flights we hit in competition, so the top flight bombs are our competition balls. In competitions, balls are being provided. You cannot bring your own balls, so that means also no ball sponsorships and so on. The ball sponsorship is more of the organization than the players. And those balls are definitely slower than really well-converting balls. And I was hitting that one 231 in Salt Lake City last year. So I know that if that would have been one of the top converting balls, that's already like a 234, 235-ish. And that's why I know also Kyle can go way faster. He's not at his limit yet. And there's some other guys like Ryan Gregnell who just broke. No, he didn't break 230. I believe yesterday he was 229.9. Oh. Yeah, that's, well, you can round it up. I feel like he's going to break it very, very soon. So there's a bunch of guys actually coming up and getting faster. And the 230 is the new 220. And that's why everything is growing at the moment. Eventually, it's going to be 240 and then 245. And then we have a whole nother discussion about equipment and all of that. So right now, what I feel performance-wise, it's the biggest push we've ever seen in long drive.
That's crazy.
You know what? For obviously, it probably is nothing like it. I kind of, in my head, though, I think of like strongman's being a little bit similar to long drive in some aspects. And obviously, when you win like World's Strongest Man, you obviously get prize money for that. But one of the biggest things with that is the fact that for that next year, you are the World's Strongest Man. And so sponsorship-wise and events, it makes you a fortune. Obviously, you said before this year it should be $120,000 or something to win World's Strongest Man, to win long drive. But is it almost more what you get with that as well, that next year you will be the world's longest driver, and that can just, in other ways, you can monetize that so much more?
It's definitely a title that I want to have.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I won the European, that's actually the next part of the story. I won the European Championship. So the next year when I competed in my first European Tour season, I won the whole thing. So I won like 5 events that season and won the Order of Merit in the end. So I called myself the European champion.
Yeah, yeah.
But being a world champion is something completely different because, well, the long drive in Europe right now compared to how big it is in the US, it's an insane difference. And it's growing on all different ends, but, well, COVID kind of gave it a strong hit in 2020, especially in Europe. And the U.S. is recovering way better. But I just hope, and I see the potential of this growing into a world tour, into a world sport, that eventually in a couple of years we have a world championship in Germany, in England, in Japan, in South Africa, wherever. Right, that this is actually a championship that's, well, not always at the same spot, but moving.
Yeah.
It should be bigger because anyone that plays golf, even just casually, when they watch you guys, will be like, find it just ridiculous how far you hit it. But obviously you came from kind of a golf, well, you did come from a golf background. Is everybody in long drive come as golfers, or is there anyone that's just started who's literally just come as a long driver and they never even played proper golf?
So everybody's got a bit of a golf background.
Yeah, you'd think so. But
there's a lot of baseball players, actually.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and I see
makes sense.
A lot of baseball players. And I see the same potential in cricket, for example, right? Basically every rotational sport, when you think like hammer throw, like discus, all of that, those guys are so strong, they just need a good foundation of a golf swing, and then mixing the two can be very, very dangerous. So I see that actually growing, and well, you cannot become a drag race driver without having a driver's license, right? Without driving your own car. So it will always somehow be related to each other. But I see more people actually starting to play golf or come and play golf to just try to hit it far. So they don't have the goal to actually play 18 holes, but be driving range nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
And then turn into a long driver. So you definitely need the fundamentals, but the reasoning why you actually do that doesn't necessarily have to be 18 holes.
Yeah, I do feel like driving range golfers is becoming a thing.
I feel like I'm becoming one, and I'm actually enjoying it.
I'd
say we both are at the minute.
Certainly when the weather's bad and you're thinking, like, I would... Obviously, it's my job, but I honestly think if I had an office job and I wouldn't play golf in the winter. I'd just go to the driving range. I could imagine getting hooked to it.
But that's it. But also, it's so different. Like at the moment, I planned on this year playing more golf, and I played a little bit, and I want to play more again. But a full round of 18 is 4 hours, 3 hours, whatever. On a Saturday morning, I'll sometimes go to Trafford where you came today and just hit 40 balls. And I can leave the house. Yeah, I can leave the house, be back in the same hour, and I'll have hit 40 balls.
Yeah.
And it is, it's like in Japan, it's massive, isn't it? Driving range culture.
Yeah.
Like it's
huge.
It's so different. I'm not saying driving range is better than the golf course, it's totally different, but it's almost like a kind of, it is a separate sport to some degree.
I remember when I was coaching at Trafford where we were today, I would coach students for a long period of time, they had no intention of ever playing on the golf course.
Yeah.
That wasn't even, it wasn't even a job of theirs. Like, all they wanted to do was, how can I get to that target? Oh, you mean the 150-yard target? Oh, yeah. Is that what it is? Yards? Like, they didn't even like...
Those points.
but the competent hitters of golf balls, but they wouldn't have a clue what a pitch fort was or a... What do you mean? What do you mean on a golf course the tee doesn't pop up out of the ground? Do you know what I mean? What do you mean on a golf course you don't have these big nets up the side? So I think there is a culture, and there's nothing. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
I love it. I think the more types of golf we have, the better for everybody. Like, again, a bit different. Again, obviously, but like they have the mini golf with the dinosaurs there. Yeah. That's still golf to some degree. It's just a different type.
I've got a question.
Go ahead.
Back in the back end of last year, when the Olympics was on, and golf was the first time in the Olympics. And we had a lengthy discussion after it about, was it good? Was it bad? Did we like it? Did we not? Whatever it may be. I made a point, and I'd love to take your take on it. I believe long drive should be in the Olympics. I believe it should be an Olympic sport.
What a beautiful topic. Yes, absolutely, is the short answer. And the long answer is, all the sports out there, take shot put, hammer throw, discus. It's exactly the same we do. Multiple tries. Little bit of a different time limit, comparing each other, and best try counts, and it's very adrenaline driven. And that's the difference to golf. So what you try in golf is you play 4 or 5 hours of golf and you try to contain your adrenaline and pretty much find your flow to play a good round of golf and manage your emotions and all of that. In long drive, you want to use everything you have to hit it as far as you can in a very short time frame of 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Yep. And that's adrenaline. That's when I see people showing up at their first long drive competitions, they can be like 40 years old. They're still shaking when they tee up their first ball.
Yeah,
it's insane. And actually managing or learning to manage that adrenaline is, that's the beauty of it. And seeing that on TV at the Olympic Games, yes,
will be good.
I think it's huge. Much more, I'll watch most sports at the Olympics. I'll find myself watching anything. I found myself, you know, even watching random Winter Olympic sports this that's just been recently now in Tokyo. I honestly think if golf was in the Olympics, as long drive, I honestly think it would bring a whole new audience to long drive.
Exactly. There's something about it that's just kind of so, it's almost like, back to our caveman day, that you're smacking literally a club against a ball, whoever gets the furthest wins.
And I tell you, in golf, when people watch golf that have no idea, non-golfers, as soon as they hear like birdie, bogey, dog leg, they have no idea what that is. And they, well, don't know what's going on. But then, and they don't see the dimensions of someone hitting a shot, then the camera switches, then all of a sudden it lands on the green. So people have no perspective. In long drive, it's the easiest rules you can have. A is playing against B. A hits this distance, B that distance, and B wins.
Yeah.
It's so simple. It's simpler than darts and everything. Yeah. It's actually the simplest sport you can play.
I also think there's extra options you could get. You could have long drive men, long drive women. You could have mixed long drives. You could have double long drives.
Doubles, obviously.
You know, there are other alternatives as well available.
Yeah, it's very inclusive too.
Do you think it will ever happen? Is anyone pushing for it? How would that happen? Is there like a long drive, like governing body that would be pushing that?
Yeah, so the governing body has been Golf Channel for a long time. And with the COVID break, they set it on hold. So what happened is the players actually founded their own federation, the Pro Long Drivers Association in the US, that's running all the events at the moment. And I feel like it's definitely a goal down the road, but right now it's about setting up the sport from scratch.
Yeah, because does it feel like that? Does it almost feel like it was, or is it factually?
Yeah.
It had ended, it was dead.
Yeah, it was dead.
And this is the rebirth of long drive.
Oh, absolutely. And then we've been very, very, very fortunate that Bryson DeChambeau decided to actually come along and try.
Yeah.
So that actually grew everything and drew eyeballs and everything to it. And based on this, we have a chance to make it to the Olympics, but I feel like it's way down the road.
Now, I don't know if you knew this, but we're actually really good friends with Bryson DeChambeau.
Yeah.
You know, the tall guy. He's pretty decent
the Puma
golfer.
Kid. The Puma kid.
Yeah, he hits it a lot. He hits it a long way. We should introduce Martin to Bryson.
Yeah, that would be a good idea.
Should we do that? Should we help you out with that connection?
Yeah, maybe. Do you have his number? Do you have his number?
No.
So tell us where this happened. Like, you are legit, we're joking here. You are legit friends with Bryson DeChambeau. Yeah. Like, how did this come about? How did this happen?
Yeah, so there was a period of time in Bryson's career when he couldn't play events because of COVID in 2020. And he decided to, well, reinvent himself, actually. And, well, try speed. And because he's seen Long Drive on TV and was like, if I can only get like 10% of this, it would be a huge impact to my game. So he reached out to a bunch of different long drivers and checked like social media for tips. Actually,
really,
yeah, and he reached out to me as well.
Just one day, did he follow you out the blue?
No, he DM'd me.
He
was responding to one of my stories when I was hitting a 205 three wood. Still remember that? And I was like, okay, well, cool. So I want to have a discussion kind of style, and I asked him a few questions. He asked me a few questions, and we basically started a conversation, and we always agreed on at some point we want to hit balls together and meet in person. But I never had the chance for 1.5 years because I couldn't travel over to the US because the borders were shut.
Yeah.
I had no chance. And I was trying, trust me. And these guys in the US started to, like, Kyle was very close with him for a long time, and they've been doing a bunch of stuff together, and he got some tips from him and other guys as well. He spoke on the phone too. So he was really into this speed journey. And then finally, at some point, when I could make it over to the US and compete, and I finally got my visa and everything, I posted a story, like, with the American flag, like, I finally made it. And he was like, all right, come by. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay. So when, because I, in between events, we somehow made it work that I can spend a couple of days in Dallas and meet him. And at that point in time, I had no idea how he was like, how he, well, he's living his life and all of that. I didn't even know, is he married or not or what, nothing. And I got there, and actually first we texted and we spoke on the phone, and we wanted to have dinner that night together. And I was that's very romantic. That's very romantic.
That's cute.
And I had no idea. I was like, okay, fine. And we go to some place and have a discussion or whatnot, and maybe it's some balls tomorrow or whatever. And then when I was at his door, I realized, okay, this is not only me out here.
Like a round table of long drivers.
it was not long drivers, but there was a lot of people.
Oh, really?
At his place. Yeah, he always has a lot of people at his place. Yeah, friends he's living with, or business partners, or the whole like crew kind of. Yeah. That's they're always together. And like 10 minutes later, it turned out that that's a really fun group. So
you enjoyed yourself and you had a good time. And
we had a lot of fun together. We played like ping pong at his place and had like a couple steaks. I didn't have like meat for a long time actually during that period. And his steak was one of the first steaks that I had that I actually enjoyed. His steaks are actually pretty good, and because he's doing them a lot. But it just clicked. Like the whole, not only Bryson, but the whole crew.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It was.
You just slotted in.
Yeah, it was just perfect. And I really enjoyed that time. We hit some balls together here and there. I had some like good, like the cool thing about this is he's always experimenting, right?
Yeah.
He's always trying to find out what works and what does not. And I'm the same way, because I know that I will never figure this out, but I'm trying to get as close as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And he's the same way. And we really enjoyed that. And we started pranking each other and so on and so forth. And then what happened is, that's how the whole Regisi thing actually came about. In Mesquite at Worlds, which was like a month later, Hogan Mothan actually approached me and was like, hey, can you come to our hotel room this night? And I was like, yeah, sure. It's like, hey, can you come by yourself?
No questions asked, don't worry.
I was like, yeah, sure. Because I had a feeling, right? I felt like, oh, they're going to prank me. You know, something is going to happen, something funny, and I love that stuff. So I went to their hotel. I showed up. They've all been in that room, and they were like, okay, Martin, so we have the following plan. Look, we want to found a content creation group, and we feel like you would be a really good fit, and this is our plan. And It all started from there.
No way.
That's how it went, right? That's how Regicy, we didn't even have the name yet. We were still looking for a name, right? But it was like on paper, it was very clear what this group is supposed to reflect, supposed to show, supposed to inspire, to entertain, to educate in all different areas. And with Hogan in the fitness, on the fitness side of things, with myself on the speed / long drive side of things, and with Bryson, I don't know what he's good at, but some stuff.
Some bits and bobs.
Cooking steaks. And ping pong. He's pretty good at cooking steaks. He's actually pretty good at ping pong. And that was a pretty good fit. And then with all the stuff that we're doing at the moment with Regicy, like we're just posting a video today with a crew of people, like six fans out on course that play a knockout match for some prices. It's very, very funny. So the variation of content is just so cool what we can set up together. And that's how it actually came about. So it was from a DM because I hit the ball far to this. And when I think about that, I sometimes have to pinch myself, like, what's actually happening? And if people, like back in the days when I quit my job and I had a fairly good job with like pretty good potential for the future, people ask me like, hey, Martin, how can you like, well, drop this for that, a sport that's actually not existing in Germany or Europe and is a niche within a niche. Yeah. And why are you actually doing this? And why are you cutting your income in like third in the very beginning? And well, I was like, because I feel like I enjoy this way more. Yeah. And I feel like I can grow a lot more in this direction. And if it doesn't work, whatever, right? You know, the German mentality is a lot about you're not supposed to fail when you're doing something job-wise. In the US, that's a little bit different. Like there's pros and cons to that mentality too. But they're like, let's try. And if we fail, whatever, we just start again, right? And I thought about this a lot. I cried a lot about this as well with my wife and so on, because we had to figure out what to do. And now since we have a little kid, he just turned one, that is another aspect to the whole story as well. But at that point in time, it was just a gut feeling of myself that this is going to be okay.
Yeah.
And now I'm hitting golf balls, doing content with Bryson DeChambeau, being really good friends with him. With all the Regicy stuff, and I'm hitting golf balls and hitting
and being on the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast.
I mean, I don't know if you've seen this.
Oh yeah, so if you can zoom in on his eye, you've got a little bit of a bruiser.
And doing stuff like this. I mean, when you see you mentioned this in the last video, actually. You said, like, the long drive stuff kind of sounds or looks very barbaric.
I feel like
that's the word you've used, right?
So, Martin, as soon as he got off the plane today, he kind of walked through and I was like, he looks like he's got a bit of a black eye there. I'm not sure if I should ask him or not.
And he was walking down like a caveman.
He's like, yeah.
With a club on his back, one club.
And I was like,
I must hit balls.
Excuse me, Mr. Borgmeyer, how have you got that black eye on your face?
That's pretty much what happened, guy. That's pretty much what happened.
So go on, what happened to your eye?
So the day before yesterday, I was doing a speed push and I didn't make it over 230 for various reasons. And one is the balls, but different story. I don't blame the balls, I blame myself. But I hit 229.4. And then right after, I mishit a ball, and I was, flicking my driver, throwing it up a little bit to catch it again, and I didn't catch it. So it hit my eye. And so that was not very smart. That was very barbaric and very stupid. Don't do this at home, kids. But it's like these sessions, these like speed pushes, when you're really turning into beast mode and just try to push it as hard as you can, are a part of the long drive training. It's not everything. It's just a part of it, right? Yeah. It's the speed push. And this is actually pushing up your speed reserve to be faster with all the clubs. It's pushing max speed also helps out on course. And I tell that all the time, like, hey guys, and Bryson also, when he was doing speed training, that's a huge part of it. But most guys, especially tour pros, they don't really dare to go down that road or feel like this is not for me. Because in the very beginning, when you do this, you see shots that you've never seen before.
Yeah, and these tour pros would be scared of that.
And you're like, I can't play like that. And they see their bank accounts fade away. Like, yeah. No, this is not going to happen. But these are actually pushing up your speed reserve. And then you swing in the same with the same smoothness or intent like you would usually do out on course, but you're just faster.
I've done a tiny bit of speed training recently since seeing you last time, and it's only a tiny bit. I would like to do a little bit more. I felt like that when I've upped my speed, and we saw 119 when down in London. Yep. Even on that very same day, I turned to Guy. I think you were doing a little bit with Steve Furlonger, and I said, "I'm just going to hit one what feels like normal now." And I actually produced 115 miles per hour at club edge speed,
which before you couldn't get when you're trying to crank it.
So I was like, "That's what I would like to do. I would like to increase my maximum potential possible, so that my normal feels fast. It is faster." For all the listeners, then, right now, let's wrap this up with a couple of kind of top tips for people listening to let's do it, break it into two models. Give me three main points for technique of hitting the ball further, and then give me a couple of top tips to actually train that, as in practicing to get maximum speed. So what's your three technical aspects that can help you swing faster?
Okay, so there's not only, so to all of this, what I'm saying now is not only a maximum speed aspect to it, but also an efficiency aspect to it. That's very important. People need to figure that it's not only about getting faster, but also actually using the body and the technique to be faster without trying hard. So what I'm saying now is not about, the easiest tip would be go smash it. No, this is not what we're talking about. So all of this is also a lot of efficiency involved. First thing, dare to lift that left foot off the ground at the backswing.
So during the backswing, left heel lifts up.
Yeah, left heel lifts up.
That extends your reach in the backswing, right?
That does two things. First, it helps you with rotation, right? Because you can rotate your hips more. That means you can rotate your torso more, and you get more out of everything, actually. Then, and that's the second part, by doing that, do not only rotate, but also use your body to actually move up. So allow yourself to elevate your body in the backswing. We've all probably been taught at some point that we have to keep our head at the same position the whole time and keep it still to be as consistent as possible, right? Yep. But the golf motion is a very athletic motion. So I encourage people to try this and at the same time use that foot to elevate yourself.
Okay.
Go up.
There are two things in the backswing.
Genau. There's your German. Look, you were asking me earlier if I think in German.
What was that then? Genau.
Yeah, genau means exactly.
Oh, I thought it meant like. Yeah. I thought it's like, you know.
Sometimes it's the subconscious things that happen or just, well, come out of your.
I must admit, you speak. Mouth,
whatever.
Outrageously good English. It's unbelievable.
I'm trying. I've never spent a lot of time in the US. It's all school English, but I'm learning. But
the one word then that, just to clarify to our listeners, lifting your body up.
Mm-hmm. The whole body. Body. Everything. So everything is elevating up.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then next.
Downswing.
Okay.
Think about it this way. When you're on your way down, a lot of people that I see try to get narrow in the downswing. So get their hands close to the body.
What, lag. Of a term.
That's what people do when they think lag. But actually, lag is not being created by pulling your arms towards your body. The opposite is actually happening. So what we try to do is actually we want to push our hands out. Because what's happening is we create a wider arc on the way down, a longer hand path. So we have more time to accelerate that. And at the same time, when I do this, that angle is actually getting more acute. And that's what we call lag.
So you're creating it with your wrist, but you're extending it with your arms.
Exactly. So I'm pushing out that way. So actually a little bit, sometimes that's my cue at least. I try to press my thumb up here. This thumb against this one. Boom, out there. So you don't necessarily have to follow that step by step, but being aware of how this is actually being created and how you use your body and how that makes the whole move more efficient is the first step to go.
Love it.
And then whack it.
And whack it. And then if someone wanted to actually train this sort of stuff, what should they look to do? As in like practice. You've mentioned to me about doing speed sessions one every 10 days.
Okay, you mean in terms of programming. Yeah. So one very important thing to speed is you cannot be fast every day. You need recovery. So you cannot practice speed every single day. Some might do it, but I don't see the best results with that. So grant yourself a couple days of recovery to do your speed sessions, but do it consistently. And I tell people, like, do it once a week in the very beginning. That's right, okay. But stick with it and track your process over time, how everything evolves, because you won't feel it. You won't see it because you're always with a current status and feel like I'm not gaining anything. But when you look back 6 weeks, you see like, oh, right.
Of course.
I made a bit of progress here. Well, track it.
It's like anything. It's like if you want to try and lose weight, you don't always know it straight away, but you'll notice over a long period of time. If you're trying to do anything, those little tiny tweaks and changes, as long as it's an upward trajectory on your target, you're achieving what you want to do.
Absolutely.
That's amazing. I'm really happy with that. I feel like we've dived into absolutely loads.
No, I have. I hope that you win the World Long Drive.
Me too.
I'm excited. I feel like from knowing yourself and a bit more kind of seeing Kyle and obviously Bryson, who's brought so much attention to it, I feel like I'm more kind of aware of the sport.
Yes.
I always kind of knew about it, knew who Joe Miller was, etc. But I feel like, kind of rightly so, it's getting the attention. So I'm going to be watching this year. When is the Worlds, actually?
That's early October.
Okay.
And I mean, the approach that I chose with my YouTube channel as well is a little bit different. I just try to show everything. Mm-hmm. I'm super transparent with everything. A lot of people reach out to me, actually from my peers in the long drive sport, and are like, why do you give away your secrets? I'm like, because I want to grow this.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like it's secrets. A lot of people are secretive about their things, but do the tiger approach, right? I don't feel like we're at that point of time that that's the way to go. I feel like the more we can put out there, the more people will pick it up, try it, get better. The more people will try and qualify, will turn up at events, and so on and so forth. So that, I mean, at least I believe that. So, well, all I can say is the more people we have, the more people enjoy it, and the more people watch it, the more successful we will be.
And if you think...
Sometimes I do that, not very often.
The more entry fees that get put in, the more money that goes into the pot. The more eyeballs,
yeah.
The more ka-ching,
more eyeballs, more sponsors.
Yes.
That's also a reason.
Yeah.
Just last question then, how many events between now and October are you in?
Eight.
So there's eight events. So one pretty much every month.
Yeah.
From now up until October.
Yeah, every 4 weeks, yeah.
Exciting times. Well, keep us up to date. If you don't know, Martin's got a YouTube channel as well. Definitely worth checking out. I just mentioned it then. I'm a big fan of it. I think you do some great stuff on there. And I think now with your insight that we've give you a little bit from Guy today, gave you some insight on your channel, you'll also be probably catching us on subscribers soon as well.
Willing to learn.
Hopefully not. Anyway, Martin, you've been a pleasure. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Good luck again at Worlds and the rest of your season. And that was a pleasure. Thanks, pal.
Appreciate it, guys.
You've got a plane to catch. Let's get you to the airport.
Thanks for having me. Really? Is it that late?
It's 3:30.
Okay, we got to leave.
We got time.
Cheers, thanks, mate.
Guys. See you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.